Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, so that means it's time for the joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. I'm in rehearsals right now for my little tenderness tour. I'm going to Europe in a couple of days. We do themes at rehearsals sometimes, so hence tomorrow's Jamaican hairstyle day at work. I'm already dreading it. Thank you very much.
Another classic, shall we say, from Duff. And the Tenderness Tour actually started yesterday in Warsaw, Poland, with Duff, Shooter Jennings, and the rest of his band. They're in Berlin, Germany tonight, and they head to the Netherlands tomorrow. They'll kick off another round of dates in the United States on September 25th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Go see Duff. It's a great show. Something a little different from the Guns N' Roses style that you're used to. It's very, very cool, acoustic, country, rock and roll, and I think you're going to love it. So all the dates and ticket info is at Duff Online. .com. Go check him out. All right. Speaking of legendary, we got the amazing Kreskin here today. He's the famous mind reading mentalist and magician that appeared on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show 88 times. That's one of the most appearances ever on that show. Johnny's the one who gave Kreskin the amazing part of his name. Kreskin's going to tell us that story. Kreskin's also sharing some of his other favorite Carson moments and talking about the time he read Carol Burnett's mind on the Merv Griffin Show. This is old school Hollywood here, guys. And Kreskin tells us a little bit about the work he used to do helping the police solve crimes. Yeah, he helped the police solve crimes. That's right. So here we go. The legendary, amazing Kreskin on Talk is Jericho. It's sponsored by Boost Mobile, and it starts now.
We're on the air now because I don't want to.
Oh, are we on the air now?
I don't want to keep you anymore. But
No.
But I enjoy how you just said that, because there's a real the kind of similarity between what I do and what you do. It's show business. Suspending disbelief,
right?
But it's entertaining. It's connecting with the crowd and making sure that they leave satisfied and happy.
And I got to ask you, B. Now, folks, he didn't bring me here for me to interview him, but I find people fascinating because of my travels, and the airline industry announced 2 years ago that I've flown a little over 3.5 million miles.
Yeah.
So 3.5 million. And in fact, one of the flights recently, United, the pilots were saying, now I used to sit in the cockpit with them, but now with our security change, you can't do it. So they were talking to me before the flight. They said, Kreskin, all of us combined here in the cockpit have not flown the amount of miles. Well, 5.5 years touring Saudi Arabia, that's a whole, I've written 20 books now. My 21st book is just being completed. And they're not fiction books, but they're experiences. And because I'm dealing, I guess the key and I don't brag about this, but I think it's one of the keys, and that is that my work, there's no real boundary between myself and my audience, because the audience is part of what I do. They didn't come to see a magic act, to see illusions, to watch dancers, they came to be a part of my working with them. And this is true whether it's, like the Minnesota State Fair, I guess that was 10,000 people outdoors, and in Canada at Toronto a year ago, the popular, I guess it's a celebration in the city. Mm-hmm. It goes on for a week. I did, I don't know how many thousands we had each audience, but I did in 19 days, 29 shows. But then, and yet there's this private shows. And on a few days ago was in a hotel, a producer got 14 of his people, and I performed for them. But I'm dealing with how people think. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's the exciting thing about my life.
Let's talk about this, because you're a mentalist.
Yeah, I'm not a psychic. I don't foretell the future.
What is a mentalist?
Well, for me, the best way I can explain it is the Riviera, when I was headlining there a year and a half ago, one night I said, who's thinking of these two names? And this elderly gentleman stood up, and I said, how do you know these people? He says, Kreskin, we're not from here. We're from another part of the country, and there are pet dogs. We love mice. I love animals. I have a passion for animals. And I said, didn't you say to your wife, I wonder if Kreskin can tell me my Army serial number? I wish it was on camera then, because he slams his fist down, because there were small tables everybody was sitting at in this room. And he said, yeah, we're not staying here. We're at another hotel in town. And that was 2 hours ago at dinner. I said to her, I wonder if you could. I said, who knows your Army number? And those of you listening in can test this. Ask any gal or guy who's been in the service, they will never forget their Army number, but they've never told anybody. My uncles who were in the Army in the Second World War, they said, you know, we never meant, because it was not part of conversation. It's not of interest to people. But he said, of course I know the number. And if he didn't know it, I couldn't look in a crystal ball. I've tried looking in crystal balls, but I get massive headaches. But anyway, I gave him this exact Army number.
You're all the name, rank, and serial number.
Exact.
Wow.
And he was in World War II. So it is the fellow that just passed away, had the show Lifestyle, the Rich and Famous, Robin Leach. A year ago, very nice of him because he had retired and so forth. He'd come to my home and all that. And he said, Kreskin, I want you to have a copy of what you did on the show, because he said it was unheard of. And I said, you know, I never, in those days, we didn't all have televisions in our homes and what have you. And he came to my house, and at the end, I said, you know, Robin, I got an idea. Why don't I told him, he looked at me and he said, you're willing to try that? I said, yes. He said, I'll tell you what, if it fails, we won't show it on the show. I said, Robin, I've built my career on integrity. It's not a magic act and so forth. And I want you to promise me, if I fail, you must show it. All the appearances the 88 Carson appearances and all those shows, no, but nothing was ever edited, because I wanted people really to know this was not something rigged. So the bottom line is, he sent a car to my home in New Jersey. They drove me to New York to a Tavern on the Green. And I get there, and there's about a dozen police cars there. And I get out of the car, and Cindy Adams, who's a columnist for New York Post, she gets out of this limousine and says, Kreskin, I'm meeting you here. The two of us are supposed to sit in the back of this limo, and it was a long limousine, but the only other person was the driver. She says, I understand I'm not supposed to speak to you. You're only to talk to the driver. And I said, yes, that's the conditions. I got in, we sat there, and the challenge simply was, and I'm so pleased he sent me a copy of this, I had to find Robin Leach, and the boundaries was that he was hiding somewhere in the entire city of New York. So I'm telling the driver to go down the street, and the police, I remember when it was all over, they said, Kreskin, it was a nightmare, because first of all, we didn't know where he was. And secondly, you're going down one way streets the wrong way. We're trying to corridor traffic. It was kind of crazy. Turns out I went to found this old beat up building, and we got out of the car, and I went in the elevator shaft, and I slammed my fist against the door and walked out of the place. And Cindy and Adam said to me later on, and the crew, they said, we didn't know what happened. I looked at the building, and because the elevator only had 8 floors, and I looked at the building, it was like 22 or something. I said, well, this makes more sense. Got in the elevator. She and I went to the top floor, which was the 8th floor. The camera crew, because they couldn't all fit in, it was an old building, made us up there. They went in another elevator, and we found a hidden elevator, took us to the top, got out of the elevator, and it's a sports club, but it's closed because it's early in the day, and they're not open till the afternoon. And we walked down long corridors, and I stop and stand in front of a Olympic swimming pool and just stand there. She told me later on, she says, we didn't know what the hell was the matter with you. There's nobody in it.
Mm-hmm.
I point to a door finally. I said, that's our destination. We go through, we open the door, and it's a large bar like this. And people are on the floor cleaning, and they're cleaning tables. And I'm walking through, the cameras are following me, and there's a man draped over a table, looks like he's soused. And I put my hand on his shoulder and say, I think our trip ends here. And he sits up, and Robin Leach says, get out the champagne. I found him in 44 minutes in the city of New York. And he's celebrating, and Cindy says, you know, he was here earlier. He said, what do you mean? She says, well, I don't know what, Kreskin, what was going on? He was standing outside where the Olympic pool is, looking at it, and Robin Leach jumps up and says, get another bottle of champagne. It turns out, as you see in the video they sent me, he had changed his clothes to a bathing suit and thought it would be dramatic if I find him in the pool. But after half an hour, he got waterlogged and changed, and here I'm still looking at the pool. So my career is like an adventure.
Yeah.
That's all I can tell you. Now it's coming out. I've worked on, we all have to give something back for any success, and whether it's family or friends or relatives. And I have, in my own way, It isn't well known, but I've worked on 86 crime cases in my life. I've only been able to help in about a third of them. No, I haven't looked into some crystal ball and said this person did the murder, but in crime cases, I've been brought on situations where victims or police or witnesses had a confused image of what was going on. Things were not clear, and by working with them, I was able to crystallize what they saw in reality. A couple of years ago, in the Midwest, I asked for a volunteer. I want some of the police cards. This gentleman came up the steps. I said, "Do I know you?" He said, "Yes, Kress, can we?" And I said, "Please forgive me for interrupting. I don't want anything prearranged. Let's say hello to me after the show during the meet and greet and we'll talk. Where did I meet you?" He says, "I was hit by a car. I stopped." And I said, "Would you tell this story?" 30 years ago or so, he was hit by a car in the Essex County area of New Jersey, and he was thrown some 50 to 60 to 70 feet, we don't know how much. And there were three witnesses, women, who became hysterical because it looked like he was dead. Turns out the police got him and were thought he was, and then realized there was some life, and meeting him now years later, he's in pretty darn good health and what have you. He says, I'm glad to tell the story. They took him to the hospital and the police brought these three women who were hysterical because there was no description of what happened. They knew it was a car that hit him. To see me, they brought the first woman into my office and I couldn't work with her. She was too hysterical. The second woman, I was able to calm her down and I was able to finally piece together one half of the license plate, but not the whole thing. The third woman came in. I was able to work with her, got the other half. They got a license plate, and the next day they got the car. The person had hit and run and left for Connecticut, gotten out of the state of New Jersey into Connecticut, and they found the car, and thank God the crime was solved. What's interesting is 2 months later, I'm home in New Jersey. My brother was a policeman in the town, and he calls me and said, "There's some police here. They're not in our department. They need to see you." And I said, "Well, bring them over, of course." So they came over, and I said, I recognized them. I said, "You have a new case. How did the hit and run?" They said, "Kress, we've solved the case. We've got the guy and what have you." And I said, "Well, it's a new case." They says, "No, no." I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "You know, 2 months ago, not this last case, we brought to a heavyset man. We felt he had witnessed many crimes." I said, "Yes. I wasn't able to help. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Is there another?" They said, "No, we want you to know something." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "That gentleman, that heavyset gentleman you couldn't work with, we know he was witnesses of crimes, but he seemed to be willing. You couldn't work with him." I said, "Yes." They said, "He was the gentleman who committed the hit and run act 3 weeks ago that we caught in Connecticut." I said, "Oh, that's interesting." They said, "It's probably good you weren't able to work with him." I said, "What do you mean?" He was the key head of the mafia in Essex County, New Jersey. And can you imagine, had I been able to work with him and started getting information, I may not be here talking to you. So my career, there are sides of it people have no knowledge about, but it's dramatic.
So you're able to solve these crimes based on hunches that you have? I want to hear how you're able to do this. But before we go there, let me say a big thank you to Boost Mobile for making this episode possible. If you haven't switched to Boost Mobile, this is what you're missing. A super reliable, super fast nationwide network so you can connect almost anywhere. And that's not all you get with Boost. There's so much more. You also get 4 lines for $100 a month with unlimited gigs for data, talk, and text. And when you've got a family like I do and everyone's on their phones all the time, unlimited gigs is a must. Plus, with Boost, you get 4 free LG Stylo 5 phones for the whole family. What a deal. Everyone gets hooked up with a cool smartphone. Everyone has plenty of data to talk, text, watch videos, movies, stream music, and of course, posting to social media, everyone's favorite. And Boost won't break your bank. So what are you waiting for? Switch to Boost because Boost Mobile is the switch that gives you more. Offers and coverage not available everywhere. Free phone requires port in. Additional terms and conditions apply. Visit boostmobile.com or your nearest retailer for details.
Is this all hunches that you have, Kreskin?
No, it has to do with people's thinking. It has to do with their concentration. I can't tell a person a license number unless they're concentrating, but they've had to honestly focus their attention. Now, in the case of the crime cases, that's a different thing. I mean, I've worked with police I've done seminars with police to teach them how to relax after a traumatic situation. But there you have such trauma, because I could never be involved in police work, especially when you see cases where children have
been victims. Sure, of course.
And I don't even want to go into it now. It's not a winning situation. Yeah, yeah. Today you've got to be a lawyer, a psychologist, and also a policeman. And I couldn't handle all of them. Mm-hmm. But then we can go a little bit over time. Don't worry. I'm glad we're talking. I'll stay sober. But anyway.
I got a bottle of vodka if you want.
No, Mike. You already said he has a love of my road manager. Would appreciate. I'm not going to give you the wrong information about. No.
You're talking about.
I'm talking about people, how they think and concentrate. And when, in the case of the crime-solving cases, well, I'll tell you the beginning of my career. And by the way, this is a time I am in great celebration. And any of your listeners who hear my voice now, those of you that wrote me, I thank you completely. I cannot thank all the people in England and Canada, United States, and who all wrote me memos. I have read all the memos, but I can't answer them because my time, I can't answer all letters and what have you. It turns out we announced a couple of months ago, and needless to say, on cloud nine, that a motion picture is now in production that Hollywood is doing on my life story.
No way.
I'm so thrilled. And I will tell you, and I swear to you, all of you listening in, it's true. It was not something we were seeking. They came to me. The gentleman writing the script has just about completed it, and it's unreal that something like this.
Has there been a Kreskin cast yet?
I got to tell you. You asked me. There are people I know in Hollywood, people I know in the industry, and they call me and they say, Kreskin, who's playing you? Everybody has some suggestions. There are five or six men. Matt, you couldn't think of any of the ones that are recommended that they think should play.
Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
That's a great call.
They mentioned five
He's
or six.
He's Coppola's nephew. Francis Ford Coppola's nephew, Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah. Anyway, and did you hear what he just said? Let me tell you what's incredible about that remark. The fellow that's writing the script is not with the Coppola family, but he's a movie playwright. But his last name is Coppola, and here you wish this guy.
Wow.
What a small. But it's exciting because. And by the way, folks listening in, they've agreed to leave certain parts of my. Life story out of the movie, so I won't go to prison. I'm only joking, but but what's neat is that because my career has been more than only my entertainment, there's stories that really are mind-boggling. I mean, I have to tell you, needless to say, I've worked with all the celebrities through the years, and having done 80 shows with Carson,
and which I want to talk about later. Yeah.
And of course, let's face it, one of the key things is what not everybody knows the story. I guess it'll be part of the movie. But anyway, Carson did not know me early in my career, and people in New York and Pennsylvania did, and what have you. And at that time, Carson had not taken Steve Allen had the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
One of the most brilliant men I've ever known, had tremendous wit. He wanted me to do the life story of a famous broadcaster in the past, but he's gone. I was hit by a car or a few years ago. But anyway, before Carson had the show, Steve Allen had it, and then Steve Allen left the show and went to LA and had a late night show that all the college students watched. I mean, he did crazy things. He was a riot, but he also had serious discussion, and Johnny Carson took over. So Steve Allen heard about me. And even though I was not known nationally, and flew me out to LA, and I get out there and I'm going to do the show. And they said to me, young man, would you like to meet Mr. I said, it would be interesting if I don't meet him because I don't prearrange what I do. They said, we understand, that's fine. So Steve Allen's now going to introduce me. He says, this young man has a gift. He said, we're all interested in ESPN, what have you. Would you welcome I didn't have the name Amazing. I just said the name Kreskin. Did not have the name Amazing. Would you welcome Kreskin? I walk out, and in those days, the lights in television in the 60s were very bright and hot, very hot. Now, Steve Allen is at the other end of the set. But I'm walking toward, and he's standing on a dais the way everybody has done since then. And I'm walking towards him, but I'm looking at the camera like I know it all. Sure, I know it all. The lights around the camera are so blinding. And as I'm getting close to him, it's getting blinding and blinding. I'm getting closer. And now I'm seeing flashes of light. I turn to Steve Allen, go to shake hands with him, trip over the dais and fall flat on my face. Now my family considers that the highlight of my career.
Right.
But anyway, Steve Allen says, "You all right?" I said, "I'm fine." And he wasn't that type of comedian, take advantage of that. And he said, "Let's go on." And they gave me about 35 minutes and what have you. But a man who always recorded the Tonight Show early in the day, Johnny Carson, was watching because he had done the Carson. He had done his show early in the day in New York. He went home and he's with his wife and he's watching. It's a mentalist on. He's watching the show, and he sees that incident. And as I talked to him about it years later, seven, 8 weeks later, having seen the incident of my falling over, creates a character called Karnak. And Karnak is yours truly.
Wow.
That's that. And the last show I did, the 88 shows, the last show was kind of sad because he hadn't announced his plans, but a lot of us knew about it. And I walk on, I didn't say that he was leaving the show, I didn't want it, but he would walk on. I say, "You know, Johnny, you've been so special in my career. I mean, you know, people early in my career, people, when I was coming off of airplanes, would say, 'Hi, amazing. Hi,' mm-hmm. I'd talk to my road manager, 'Well, that's nice that they're that enthusiastic. And hi, man.' Turns out, and I didn't realize until one night I watched Carson. It was a Friday night and I'm on Monday. And Carson says to Ed McMahon, he had this as a routine. He says, "Ed, Kreskin was on 3 weeks or what have you. He was only 90% amazing." Ed McMahon says, no, Johnny, it was 92% amazing. And in fact, I think, I think it was 94% amazing. He played with it so long it became my, that's how I got the name.
Amazing Kreskin, yeah. Yeah, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because I'm a huge Johnny Carson fan. I want to talk about some of your appearances on the show, over 88 appearances. But first, I want to tell everyone the latest thing I'm going after on Deal Dash. My bid buddy is set to try and win the Sony PlayStation 4 and Schultz Bluetooth headphones. I saw that the auction was starting and I set my bid buddy, so now I don't have to be stuck on my phone or my laptop all day long. You guys need to check out Deal Dash as well. It's an auction site where all the bids start at $0, and each bid only raises the price by one penny. And if you win your auction item, Deal Dash has free shipping. And right now you can go to DealDash.com, use the promo code Jericho, and get 100 bids for your first bid pack purchase. I also did the Deal Dash bid tutorial and got 10 extra bids for free. Deal Dash also has a buy it now option that gives you the chance to just buy the item you want at a fair price. So if you don't win the auction and really want the item you were bidding on, you can just purchase it from Deal Dash. And the shipping for these purchases is free as well. Now, Deal Dash also has a 90-day money-back guarantee. You can return anything you purchase or win with no hassle. All you gotta do is create your account at DealDash.com. Use my promo code Jericho to get 100 credits with your first bid pack purchase, and then start bidding. You can use PayPal or a credit card to buy bid credits. So go to DealDash.com, create your account, and use my promo code Jericho to get 100 bid credits. Sign up today at DealDash.com. That's DealDash.com. Promo code Jericho for 100 bid credits. Do it now. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, because, you know, I'm a huge Johnny Carson fanatic. I was born in 1970, so growing up, but I always saw you on there. And then when I found out you have 88 shows, one of the...
And it says 61, but the truth of the matter is, and I can say this now, folks, Johnny was very bitter because... But understand, folks, don't blame a network and what have you. They didn't know any better in those days. It happened to Mike Douglas, too, with whom I did 118 shows, what have you. But they erased the first year of all his shows, all those shows, and some were the first time a person appeared on
them. Isn't that amazing? They would erase the tapes to have new tapes.
Yeah, do the shows. Yeah. And he was very bitter. So after the second year, he had copies made of every single show. And they were buried in concrete in parts of California because he felt that they should stay. And as the years went by, everybody realized how valuable these things were. But, you know, in the early days, television was an adventure. It was an experiment. I mean, one thing to Carson's credit, which I wish more who were doing late night shows would learn from him, he had one rule. You didn't edit what went wrong. You kept that on the show because it kept the credibility, the liveness, and spontaneity. That's not true of television anymore. No, let's not go into it. The people are beginning to learn about this, things that are happening, most of the things in people's homes and what have you. Well, I could say it now because it's gotten into print, but one of the housewives' homes and so forth, the crews call me. They said, where do you see this incident? And I said, I don't get to watch the show. Well, they'll say, Chris, you'll enjoy it, because they had to run through the thing 18 times before they got it to look like it was spontaneous.
Right.
When you lose, and he had good philosophy, you lose the spontaneity. Something, and if it's different if it's a show where you have to have a script or whatever, that's the way the show is done. Mm-hmm. But when you lose what's given across as spontaneity, something becomes missing to the viewer, and they sense it inwardly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
Yes,
you know this business backwards
absolutely.
And forwards. And you know it very well.
It's the same reason when we're talking, I don't have a list of questions, because that takes it to a different direction.
Well,
we're listening to each other and hearing the stories, the way that they're flowing, as if we're having a conversation on the street.
You said something very interesting, because of the thousands of shows and then the hundreds with celebrities and what have you. In generally speaking, well, I'll tell you how it came back. Let me give credit to the gentleman, because he deserves, and of course his career ended in scandal. That was Roger Ailes. But Roger Ailes made the Fox.
So was Roger the president of Fox?
No, he was. He was brought in as a consultant.
Gotcha.
He had been the consultant to four presidents.
Mm.
He was their advisor.
Mm.
I said to him one day, I said, when I was doing the Mike Douglas show, because I did 118 shows, I said, Roger, why did you stay with the presidents? He says, I said, he would advisor them. He says, Kreskin, you can't get a goddamn thing done in the political picture today. There's so many advisors and lobbyists that it could go on. And he says, I couldn't stand the pressure. But anyway, he came to me one day and said, you know, we always discuss with you a topic that we might like to bring up to you, because you might have a philosophy on it. We know you can't solve everything, but you have an outlook on it. So they bring up issues or accidents or crises. He said that we'd like to do something with you. We'll bring you on. You'll have your usual 30 minutes, which is a long time to have as a gift. We'd like to ask you one or two questions we're not going to tell you about. I said, don't tell me anything about any of the questions. So in the last 80 shows, I was never told. Those shows I did not know anything about, I had fun with and made funny remarks and so forth. But, you know, and I tell this to all of you listening, and they're going to college, they're going into businesses where you're going to deal with others and so forth. For God's sakes, do something which is disappearing from U.S. culture today. It is one of the greatest crises that we have in our country today. We're not listening to each other. You show me a person that has 200 friends on the internet, and I will show you a very lonely person.
Mm.
And sociologists agree. They say, Kreskin, we're so used to quick answers that we're not thinking about what someone says or reflecting upon it later on. And that's how some of the best interviews came about. We were sitting down and talk about a topic, and something came up, and they'd say, you know, and they'd think of something else to ask me. And that's what made communication interesting.
Absolutely.
And the best communicators, that's the way they function.
Sure. That's why this is the podcast. It's a great way to communicate. It's a long form interview where it's not just a tense, you know, a junket where you give the same answer every 6 minutes.
No.
You get a chance to kind of actually really relate to each other.
And that's becoming the new area of interview in
absolutely.
The internet. Becoming a major, like you're making it a major part, because, but at the same time, those listening in, listen to what I'm saying, learn from this, because you've got to, it's not just hearing, it's reflecting upon the words being said, and that's the key. That's the key to all great stories about people and all great interviews. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've written 20 books, I'm finishing my 21st book, and I love my work. Well, not last year, but 2 years ago, if you took all the radio, television, and concert appearances, I did exactly 364 appearances around the world in that 1 year. They tell me, people know me because they say, how do you keep, I jog every night for about 20 minutes. I'm a runner. And I don't jog with earphones because I read voraciously, not just writing, but I have a library that the BBC in Canada, in England, has come to film, but it's over 8,000 books. When I'm home, I read 4 books a night.
And that's becoming more and more of a lost art, reading books, as sad as that is.
But you know, the point of the matter is, you read and you reflect, and if you read the great entrepreneurs in history, they all had one gift, most of them did. They knew how to stop the world and get off and listen to themselves. Einstein sat in a rowboat in Princeton University, they told me, and he pulled the oars in and let the boat drift. There was no one in the boat with him. He had to think about what he was studying and discussing all day long. And JFK closed the door of the White House door after he had meetings with the military or with the economy or what have you. And his secretary knew I will not to call him unless it was an emergency. Mm-hmm. Those doors were closed. And during the 20 minutes he was by himself, at first he read for 10 minutes trash, crap, crummy magazines to get his mind off of what he heard. Because he learned that by doing that, when he then started to reflect, things came to him that he did not pay attention to. That's a gift which people should learn. Mm-hmm. I could talk about my work. My work's exciting.
I want to talk about some more.
And by the way, folks, so you know, listening in, this gentleman I'm with now, he's been in broadcasting. He's been in the business a long time, communications. I dare not read his thoughts live on the air.
Still thinking about that vodka. Okay, so the amazing Creston is going to share some more stories from the Carson Show. But first, it's DDPY time. I got to say this, Diamond Dallas Page and his incredible DDPY program. I thank him for being a longtime sponsor of this show and for personally saving my wrestling and singing careers. I wouldn't be here talking to the amazing Creston without DDPY. And DDPY can help you too. It's a great program to get you on the path to healthy living and keep you there. It's also an amazing, no pun intended, option to help you alleviate any pain you might be experiencing from injuries, joint, muscle problems, etc. DDPY is my go-to after matches, long flights, and Fozzy gigs. It keeps me loose, prevents muscle pain and soreness. I can't say enough about DDPY, except that you got to try it yourself. So take advantage of the 7-day free trial of the DDPY Now app. Just download it and start using it. I love the DDPY Now app, and I know you'll love it once you try it. You can connect a Bluetooth heart monitor to it so you can track your calories burned. You can do live workouts from the DDPY Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. So sign up for your free 7-day trial at ddpyoga.com/Jericho and pick up Dallas's new book to help you get started called Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It, filled with lessons from Dallas's own life and career. You can get that wherever books are sold. Let Dallas and DDPY change your life. Start today. ddpy.com/Jericho. ddpy.com/Jericho. Get in the best mental and physical condition of your life and go do it now.
Tell us about some of your highlights from the Carson appearances, because that's so amazing. Like, that's the golden age of Carson.
I will tell you a side story, which we're thinking of making it part of the motion picture, and nobody knew about it. Fred DeCordova, his producer, they all knew something was going on. Carson had a rule. He never met the guests before the show. Mm-hmm. That was a rigid rule. Mm-hmm. But I was going to do something with Carson that had some risk to it. Not that I was going to hurt him. I wanted to take a chance. And I needed to see him. And his secretary said, let me call Johnny and ask him. And she says, all right, Creston, he respects you. You know he does. I said, I know. She says, you'll come in and we'll see him. So I come in to NBC. This is when it was in New York. Later on, they'd fly me to LA, but it was in New York. I come in there, and I'm there early. Instead of going to my dress room, his secretary says, well, let me take you to Johnny. He knows you're coming in. And she wasn't herself. And I'm working. I'm used to how people think. I said, you okay? Yeah. And we're walking down a long hall. I said, can I stop? What's the matter? She says, Creston, I've been with him so many years, he doesn't see anybody before a program. I said, but he did give you, he said it was okay. She said, I said, please understand, it's for his own safety. And she seemed to calm down. I went in, I saw him, and we were talking, and I did something with him, dealing with how he concentrated, he closed his eyes and what have you. He's about to leave, I see a deck of cards over there. I said, Johnny, what do you sit with the deck? He says, yeah. I said, I know you were a magician one time. He said, yeah. I said, I also know that you stunk, you couldn't. He said, yeah, I wasn't very good. I said, I'm not known for sleight of hands, not my work, but let me show you something. I did something with him, and he said, you SOB. He said, what the hell did you do? And I said, well, I'll see you later. So now it comes to what I'm going to do with him. And Bette Midler is sitting over here, but I'm the last guest. I'm sitting here. And we get up, and Johnny gets up, and I said, Ed, would you come over, Ed McMahon and Doc Severinsen? I said, place two chairs here, and they don't know what I'm going to do because there was no rehearsal. And I said, John, I'm talking to you, and as I talk to you, your eyes are going to close and what have you. And something's going to happen. And they're looking scared as can be. And I said, if Johnny starts to fall backwards, stop him. And Ed said, are you kidding? Of course I will. So Johnny starts swinging back. He left, and I said, I want you to lift him. And I explained, and they put his head on shoulder on one set of chairs, his feet on the other, and there was nothing in the middle of him. There was just not some magic illusion. He was stretched between two chairs. And I asked Bette Midler to come over. No, she wouldn't. I said, please, Bette, come over. And she wouldn't, and Ed said, please. She told me later on, I had dinner with her months later in New York. She said, Kreskin, I thought I'd be out of work. So finally, Fred de Cordova said, Bette, go over there. She came over. She didn't know what she asked her to do. Now, Johnny's between two chairs. His head's here, his feet are here, and there's nothing
like
in the middle.
Planked, yeah.
Yeah. I said, sit in the middle of him. She looked at me. I said, what? I said, you sit in the middle. She did. I said, lift your legs. That picture, by the way, got in the centerfold of Parade magazine on one of the Sunday supplements all over the world. It was a centerfold. And there she sat, and the audience was hushing, what have you, and McMahon and Severinsen. So we lifted her off, and we slowly stood Johnny up, and I counted 10 back to 1, and his eyes opened. He said, did I? I said, yeah, Bette sat on him. He said, I would have sworn it was a baby. And we finished and so forth. Now, a month or so later, I'm on the show, and I'm not doing anything. I'm doing something with some from the audience or one of the celebrities. Mm. I said, we go to a commercial break. Johnny says, come over here, Kreskin. We're at a break. I'm thinking, yeah, John, come over. Come over to his desk. I'm thinking, well, he doesn't do things behind the scenes of the viewer. He pulls the chair out from under his desk, pulls me under the desk. And Johnny and I crouch together, sit face to face under the desk. Now there's a commercial. He puts a deck of cards there and says, Kreskin, do it. Name a number, 47. I do. And he said, Jesus Christ, I did it 4 or 5 times. He says, we got to get back on the air, get back. I go over and sit with him. We're on there. We don't even talk about what happened. I did. And then when he went to LA, I did that 8 times with him. And
it was like his favorite trick.
It was a skill with cards. I went on with other things. And when he retired, Ed was at NBC. He was still consulting with NBC, and I was on one of the shows. And he came to my dressing room. He says, Kreskin, he says, I can ask you now. He's not one of us ever addressed Carson on what you were doing. We have no idea because he would have fired us right then and there. He said, what the hell were you doing under the desk with him? And I explained, because nobody knew, the guests who were sitting next to us couldn't see. Well, there was one point, because he knew cards, where he could set the 52 cards on the table shuffled. I said, well, give me a number. He said, 28. Instantly, I gave him 28 cards like that. My fingers were so sensitive that I could feel every single position. He couldn't believe, he said, the long story, I'm banned from casinos, gambling, all this shit.
I'm sure.
But anyway, so the situations through the years with Johnny but when mistakes took place, we had fun with them, and it became part of the drama of the show. And that's sad when that's lost. Steve Allen had that gift also, because they felt at home. They could ad lib and play with something that didn't happen maybe the way it was supposed to happen. And I mean, he would kid me when I was going to do something with playing cards with a celebrity, because he knew I couldn't play poker or anything. And I and Merv Griffin, who had a show also, I did I guess it was a 105 Griffin shows, but Griffin always had a deck of cards on the set after a few shows, and said to me, Kreskin, I know you're here, you're going to read what people are thinking and so forth with our celebrity guests, but I want you to do something with cards with one of our guests. And the reason was, and people didn't know this, but Merv had a great passion for poker, and told me how the most incredible poker player he ever played against, he said, I sat in her home in the kitchen in Rome, Italy, while she's on the phone with her son, who's maybe somewhere else in the world, or a daughter who's another a country, and she's maybe arguing, we're playing poker, and she's creaming us. And because it was the best poker player, it was Sophia Loren. Mm-hmm. He could never beat her at a game of poker. So he wanted to see how other people, he wouldn't, could play, how they thought when they played cards, because he was fascinated with the game of poker. By the way, folks, this gentleman here doesn't know it, but I wouldn't even touch the cards. We're going to have a game of poker. I'm kidding you. People would say, you're absolutely, Carson would say, you're out of your goddamn mind to do something like that.
So a few last questions for the amazing Kreskin. This is great stuff. I love these old Hollywood stories. Coming up in a bit, but first, our message from our friends at NHTSA. Now, everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or killed, but let's take a moment to look at some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die. Almost 29 people in the United States die every day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. And even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives each year. Many people are unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. Not so harmless after all, is it, right? Get this, from 2007 to 2015, marijuana use amongst drivers killed in crashes doubled. The truth is driving while high is deadly. So stop kidding yourself. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, don't get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI, drive sober, or get pulled over. Talk is Jericho, also supported by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Summer's heat can be draining on your vehicle's battery. Rising temperatures can cause battery fluids to evaporate. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts now and have your battery tested free of charge. If your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are going to help you find the exact superstar battery that fits your car or truck. They're going to do it for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better service every day.
Just a few last questions for you. And I, by the way, real quick.
No, sir, please.
If we can't, at this time in our history, if we can't laugh at ourselves, we're in goddamn trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And we're in trouble right now. Sociologists tell me this. Seinfeld, who announced a year ago he will never work in a university again, and now seven other comedians also. I've done 1,000 university shows in this country, Canada.
Why won't they work in universities anymore?
Because political this climate is unheard of. They now edit what a comedian can joke about. That is unheard of. Second World War, I sat in a movie theater as a kid where I would watch cartoons, and there was the newsreels, and there's Franklin Delano Roosevelt, World War II taking place, and there is Milton Berle, Bob Hope talking, and you could see Roosevelt laughing because he mocked everybody. We can't laugh at ourselves. That's serious, and we're in trouble. End of commentary there.
Yeah. You mentioned that you would, when you were on the Carson show, you would read celebrities' minds,
yeah, their thoughts, what they were thinking. Well, I mean, there were all kinds of the, you know, Arlene Francis was on a lot of performers and what have you. And a lot of times they'd come in from a, they're making a movie or something like that. And I'd be sitting with them and I'd say, you know, here's a book, turn any page. And Carson did an interview with this person, turn any page. And there, and I'll look at some words on the page. I'll suddenly interrupt them and say, is your foot all right? And go like this. And one of the gals, it wasn't Arlene. Anyway, it turns out during the rehearsal of the show, she had tripped and hurt her ankle in some way. Well, the gal who was famous for pulling her ear.
Carol Burnett.
I love her.
Yeah.
She and I have an inside gag, and Carson and so forth. We're on a show, and it was the Mike Douglas show. And Mike, I was asked to be on for a week, and that was a very special honor.
Yeah.
Because they were very good to me. And Mike says, you know, Kreskin, we won't have her on the air. We don't have a camera in that area, but we'd like to interview her about something. It was Carol Burnett, and we're talking. I can't see her. Mm-hmm. I said, Carol, I'm going to try to read your thoughts. Let's not make it difficult. Think of something that you can see in the room, what have you. And she says, all right, Kreskin, I have something. I just want you to concentrate. And I wrote something on a square blackboard, and I gave it to Mike to hold away from the camera. I said, Carol, what are you thinking of? She says, Kreskin, I'm not in home. I'm in a studio, my manager, and I'm looking at a tree. I'm looking out the window. Well, my face fell. And I said, well, Carol, I didn't get what you were thinking of. And Mike showed the camera, and it was a figure. It was a bronze figure. Mm-hmm. And she screamed. Mm-hmm. And Mike said, are you okay? She says, Mike, Kreskin, hear me? Yes. She says, all the time, I've been in my office looking out the window. I've been holding a bronze statue that was on the desk of my manager, and that's what I've been holding all this time. And she wasn't even concentrating on it.
Right.
So, but that's how it came. So my experiences sometimes are, but then the one thing we should, before we should really address, because it's my signature, and it's been written about all over the world, and no one in the world is doing this regularly in their performances, but it is quite true. In most of my performances, during the show, whether it's a concert, a theater, a state fair, a private gift fair, I have my check brought forward.
Your guarantee, yeah.
And I get from the audience a committee of six or eight people. In theaters, Carnegie Hall, you have four balconies there and what have you. And I hand the committee, four of them, my check. Two of the committee members escort me from the theater. When I was doing this in Toronto outdoors for a state fair, they didn't have a place to take me out because I was outdoors. They had a van off the stage, and the windows were all wallpapered closed, and I was taken in by part of the committee, and the doors were closed so the committee could say I could not see what happened. While I'm out of the theater, what have you, my check is hidden anywhere within the theater. The committee must hide it. It must be accessible, not dangerous, like falling off a scaffolds or whatever, but they must know exactly where they've hidden, and they come back to the stage, and when they come back in, I'm brought to the stage, there's no questions asked, the committee does not speak to me, I take one of the committee members and say, I want you to concentrate on what I've done, do not speak to me ever again, and then I walk through, and if I don't find my check hidden somewhere in that theater, I forfeit the entire fee, it's returned to the committee, to the organization that booked me, the company that booked me, or what have you. And the show was for free. And I failed 11 times. The last time was off-Broadway this past year. But through the years, and I've done it maybe over 3,000 times, that one of the most famous failures was in New Zealand, which I love. I've toured there a number of times. It was my first tour there. Second night, I failed. And the press after the show came up to me and said, could we have a press conference on the steps here tomorrow morning? And I said, they say, we know you're upset, Chris. And I said, no, but I'm more upset with myself. They held, there was over 100 reporters there because word got around, not simply because I failed to find my check, but I lost the night before exactly $51,000. The money was turned over to a crippled children's hospital. Part of it was named after me. They named a wing after me, what have you. But one of the most dramatic successes. Colleges are diabolical. I come back into this university in the Midwest. It's in a gymnasium and it's crowded. Because it's not just the students, but their parents, it's a family weekend. And I'm walking through, practically falling over people because they're sitting on the tarp and they're sitting on bleachers. Come up to this elderly man, have him stand, ask and open his mouth, no check. I apologize. I said, sir, forgive me. I walk back through the stage, through the crowd of people sitting on the floor and in the bleachers, a couple of thousand, and there's another person on the committee. I said, listen, you're on the committee. You've hidden this. You know where it is. You've got to concentrate clearly. In your mind, don't talk. We walk through the audience, and suddenly I freeze. And I turn, and it turns out I'm standing away from the second person in the second level of the bleachers who I talked to before. I had him stand up. I said, sir, if I embarrass you, sit down. It ends the test here. I've lost my fee. I said, would you open your mouth again? I looked at him and said, does this have to do with the roof of your mouth? It's one of the picture incidents in my entire career. He reached in his mouth, took out his upper plates, and handed me my check. I could tell you stories that become articles all over the world.
Kreskin, amazing to have you on, sir. Thank you so much.
By the way, I'm not going to say goodbye to you. In the spirit of broadcasting, let's just say, to be continued.
To be continued. Yes, sir.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.